if you make the first move and you make that positive move and you have that positive energy and genuine, like, altruistic desire just to make things better, people gravitate towards that. That's the kind of people that people want to help.
I'm Alex Blumberg, host of the podcast Startup, and you're listening to We Are LA Tech.
My name is Esprit Devora, born and raised LA, and I created We Are LA Tech in 2012 to unify the community. Podcast launched in 2014, continuing to help people find the best talent, to connect with each other, to form awesome relationships. So proud of this show. Enjoy.
Hi, this is Joseph O'Gean, and I'm a product manager. I built platforms used by AOL, Coca-Cola, and National Geographic. I love listening to We Are LA Tech because Esprit and her team really make it easy for us to understand the LA Tech community and really break down how companies and users can utilize this new emerging technologies to build businesses and connect with their communities. You can follow me online at josephhogeen.com. That's Joseph Hogeen, HOLGUIN.com.
Join thousands of people in LA Tech on our We Are LA Tech Facebook group, where you can discover events, job opportunities, and even housing. Go to wearelatech.com/community. We'll take you straight there. That's wearelatech.com/community.
We all have to be so careful as driven creators to not burn out. That's what today's personal spot is about. It's about how to kind of recalibrate, how to be aware, how to give ourselves permission to, like, not have to grind hard. I know the last week I've been doing a lot, but I've just been feeling so unmotivated. Like, I don't want to work out, don't want to do this, don't want to do that. And I find that when I push against it, and I'm, like, upset at myself for being unmotivated, it becomes worse. It becomes more intense. And sometimes, I mean, everybody listening to this podcast is driven. That's just, we're a set of driven people. Like, we attract one another. That's just how we are. And so we have to be gentle with ourselves when we need time to heal and recoup. And it's also okay not to be game on and David Goggins, like, every single day. It's all right to have down days. And I think, I know I've gotten really hard on myself for that. And when I see my friends get really hard on themselves for that, it just makes it all so much worse. So be gentle to yourself. It's okay to nap. It's okay to rest. It's okay to take some days easy. It's okay to take some weeks easy sometimes. At the end of the day, what true success is to enjoy our own bodies and our own lives. Doesn't matter how many followers we have or how much money we make or what kind of accolades or status we receive. All that matters, like the true definition of success, is are we enjoying our own life and are we living our life purposefully? That's it. It's everything else is just like really vanity, you know? So I hope that helps in your journey a little bit, and enjoy the next episode.
Welcome back to the We Are LA Tech podcast, spotlighting LA Tech companies and talent. So excited for our next guest who just moved from West Hollywood to Santa Monica. I can't wait to get into it. Welcome, Mark. Hello.
Hello. That's a great introduction. Thank you so much. Love the energy.
Oh, thank you. To kick things off, go ahead and tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do. And then let's lead right into, like, I'm so curious about why you relocated the team from West Hollywood to Santa Monica. But first, tell us about your company.
Cool. Yeah. So my name is Mark McDermott. I'm the co-founder and CEO of ScreenCloud, and we are a SaaS platform for digital signage. So we help businesses all over the world, big and small, to manage their networks of screens and communicate to their customers, their teams, their students, whatever that might be. So we're based out of LA, and prior to the pandemic, we were based in West LA. And we had a really nice space. We were over at Village Workspaces, if you know those guys.
Yes, I'm very familiar.
Yeah.
So West Hollywood. Really nice, that was more like West LA.
Yeah, West LA. Sorry, yeah West LA. Yeah, that's right. And we just kind of outgrew the space a little bit. The teams got bigger. And I think there's a real buzz going on down in Santa Monica. We've got a nice space that we've literally just kind of signing the final deal on like yesterday. So it's completely empty. It actually looks, it's kind of got that lovely urban feel. Looks really cool. And so the team have been dealing with that this week. I haven't actually physically even seen it yet, but they went in fast, found a space, fell in love with it. And we'll be moving in August. And the primary reason really is it's kind of an area where the talent wants to kind of be. It's a great place to work. You got that kind of extra sort of social life afterwards down towards the beach. So just feels like, because we're going to be expanding the team quite a lot now, that this is just going to be a little icing on the cake when we were out making those offers to the great talent that we've got here.
Did you move from essentially like a co-working space to your own space, or is this a co-working environment as well?
No, it's going to be our own space. Yeah. So we're kind of, we're going out of that startup stage into the growth stage and preparing for bringing on quite a lot of new people. And also partly it's to do with being a kind of B2B SaaS company. Security is a huge deal to our customers. We're SOC 2 compliant. And one of the big parts of SOC 2 is actually kind of people security and data security and security of your systems. And that's much harder. It's achievable in co-working spaces. Yeah. But you can have so much more autonomy when it's your own space. And we can just, you know, we take it really seriously. And it's now just, we're just at that stage of evolution where it just makes sense. We can have it all our own way. We've got room to expand. So yeah, it's exciting times for sure.
I'd love to dive in, like for you to walk us through who your customer is and that experience. But before we do, because I think it is so helpful to our community, especially all of us thinking about, should we go back to get an office now after we've been working remotely for a year. What are some of the questions you think we should be asking ourselves to make those decisions?
Yeah, that's a really, really pertinent question. I mean, it's actually a question that we not only kind of face ourselves as a company, but also all of our customers, because as you can imagine, screens tend to live in public spaces like offices. So a lot of the projects that we're working on right now is helping our customers with that communication and how they're going to adopt going back in after all of this. If I were just to speak about our own culture first, I think that we've always been flexible in how we've worked and how we operate. So we've never been insistent that people have to be in the office. But likewise, we've never been fully remote. That was that we weren't by design. I always felt naturally that having a kind of 3-in-2 system just worked very well. And for our original offices, this is what we started. And it just, to be honest, we didn't design it. It just evolved that way. Like we were just being pretty laid back and we were like, you know what, actually there are days when we want to do deep work and they are better off done at home. And then there are days where we want to be together, we want to brainstorm more and have more of that kind of the community feel and that sort of osmosis effect of information passing between people, which is so critical. I would say early stage, late stage, whenever. And I think actually, if I look at the last 18 months, if I look at the problems that we're kind of facing now culturally, it is the fact that that teams who are siloed away from each other just haven't had that natural kind of crossover. We've onboarded a lot of people who we've physically never met and haven't met other people. And it's really difficult to go Slack someone that you've never even met before and ask them a direct question or like ask for some help if you just don't know. But if you've met that person, even if it was just for a coffee or just kind of in passing, you just feel that bit more like able to go and talk to them.
Right.
And as we've onboarded more and more people in this time, I start to see the silos and the splits that just weren't ever a problem for us culturally before. And it has resulted in, you know, in some sort of small problems, which we're working on. But, you know, we've just started going back into the office we have 4 different locations around the world. So in the USA, UK, and also in Thailand.
Right.
So in Thailand right now, COVID's really kind of spiked up. So everyone's at home. But in the UK and US, we're basically in the process of coming back in.
Wow.
And everyone wants to. Everyone wants to.
Really?
And I think it's been,
interesting. That's fascinating in itself. I mean, first of all, the perspective you're able to have globally, very interesting. 2 is I'm just remembering, you know, back when people were like, "Woo, I get to work from home." I don't know. And now people are begging to come back.
Mm. Really? Yeah. I mean, you know, if we take, say, for example, well, London and LA, I think culturally is very similar. Like a lot of the people are living in shared like flats and things like that. You know, I've seen a lot of our colleagues working from their bedroom. And that's just super unhealthy. I've also seen the hours of day that they tend to be working really stretching out. So first thing in the morning, they're getting up and they're getting on the computer. They're like on late at night. Often, you know, it's not right. You know, it's not healthy to be connected just to one room and like have everything happening. And I think that we had a, you know, it's been like the lockdowns have been pretty severe in both the UK and the US. And I think it's really affected everyone's mental health a lot. Mm-hmm. And we've just started going back in and just having, you know, socially distanced. We're not letting everyone back in because we're being responsible about that. So we're kind of taking it in shifts and turns and things like that. But just the atmosphere, everyone just feels a bit like a weight has been lifted. You do a Zoom call and you do a Zoom call for a reason.
Right.
You don't just go on Zoom and just sort of shoot the... I don't know if I should
say
that.
Unfortunately, but, you know, I mean, some people do. It drives me bananas.
Well, yeah. I mean, to be honest, I get Zoom fatigue if I'm honest.
Me
like,
too.
You know, yeah. So if I've done like 6 hours of Zoom in a day, I just feel absolutely exhausted.
Same.
And often I just sit on the sofa at the end of the day and just basically fall asleep or something.
Totally.
But you know what? I did a day yesterday where I did at least 50% of my meetings were in person. And at the end of the day, I felt energized. You know, the atmosphere in the meetings was more lighthearted. We didn't feel so constricted by time. We didn't, because an hour goes in and you do the hour. We didn't really think about time. We just kind of did the meeting until we didn't need to do it anymore. And, you know, it was like, oh, it's 25 minutes. Yeah. Fine. We're done now. Hey, let's go and grab a tea. Or, you know, I actually said to one of my colleagues, I was like, why don't we just go for a walk and do this one? It was like lunchtime.
Yeah.
It was a really nice day. So yeah, let's go out and walk around. So
yeah,
we've lost that kind of informality and that playfulness in our environment by being these like, oh, it's a meeting. It's in my calendar. Yeah. I've got to turn up. Here's the agenda. It's just like, wow, we really got a bit rigid here. And that isn't where the creative stuff comes from. It isn't where those accidental moments happen, the way that the friendships which can occur just by between people who just have nothing to do with each other in terms of their role, but everything to do with each other in terms of their personality.
Right.
And I just think that, like, I'm not saying that what happened, I think it needed to happen given what we've experienced and what was happening, but it has had some serious negative effects which we need to now redress. And I have nothing against fully remote, but I think that is a very intentional culture that you need to instill from day one. And I think the type of people that are going to be attracted to a fully remote business, you know, is going to really suit them in terms of the location they live, maybe their family situation, their own personality, whatever that might be.
Right.
I think when you're in major cities like London, LA and Bangkok, and in Belfast, Northern Ireland, which is the capital of, it's a small country, but it's capital. People who want to work in those environments, they want to be out in the city, having the full city experience, which is your job, your colleagues, which become friends often.
Right.
And what happens after work, what happens before work, and just the buzz of that. And I think, yeah, we've lost that. And so companies that went full remote and then are coming back out, I expect most people to want to go back in when they feel safe. And obviously that's a critical thing. We shouldn't be, if people don't feel ready, then the timeline should be as long as people feel, you know, ready to do it.
I just thought it'd be really helpful for people to have a perspective, like an insider view, someone who's made that decision to get the office space, because I know that's what everybody is going through right now and thinking about, like, do I not? Which way are we going? So it's nice to have an insider peek into like your thought process. Let's get into your customer experience, so everyone can understand, one, if this applies to them, right? And have an understanding of how your company works. So let's talk about who is your customer and how do you wow their life?
Interestingly, with screens kind of they live everywhere, right? So often when you talk about digital signage, people default to what they're most they most see and understand. So they think about hospitality, they think about screens in bars, airports, or retail, or quick serve restaurants showing menu boards and things, or advertising. So they're kind of like your front facing screens, which the job of that screen is really to get you to buy things or to engage with the products or the companies. We do that, and we have a huge amount of customers. We have 8,500 customers, so we really do span a lot of different verticals and different use cases. But the area that we are kind of specialist in, and that I think is really intellectually like the most challenging, rather than sort of just showing video ads on a loop, right, is screens which face internally into the business. Mm-hmm. So they could be in the back office of like a retail location or in the corporate HQ showing dashboards and data, internal comms from HR, COVID compliance updates, or more cultural updates. Again, welcoming new joiners to the team, celebrating work anniversaries, sharing stories across different locations. So our typical customer is kind of a mid-tier to large enterprise. We do have a lot of SMB. That's kind of where we started. We're a bit bottoms up in how we've gone over on our journey. It's just right. Probably not surprising for SaaS. So we have a whole load of wonderful SMB clients, but increasingly we're kind of moving into that mid-tier and enterprise. So they have like multiple locations, possibly multiple countries. Their problem is typically that they have a workforce which is spread out, not just geographically, but also in what they do. So we work often with companies that have deskless workers. They may be people who are in education or out front serving customers, manufacturing, things like that. They don't have computers and phones in their hand, and they don't even have company email addresses. So how do we communicate to them? How do we get them connected with what the company's trying to achieve and connected with each other? We use screens. So the screens are just these large ambient messaging platforms, which we put into kind of coffee areas, like and rest areas and things like that. And that's how we get the messages through to those people. So it's really a communication platform. That's where we like to kind of spend most of our time thinking about.
I mean, am I misunderstanding? Is this mainly an offline product, meaning like there needs to be teams working in office spaces in order for this? Because it sounded like you have a version that you could have in home too, but no.
Yes. We do have that as well. Yeah. So we have at-home embedded versions that we can run inside of like intranets or Microsoft Teams and things like that.
Okay,
so
that's more like what your I kind thought. Of, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So we have that like that individual update thing. And then we also have like the screens, which are more in the spaces where people are. So a lot of our customers couldn't close down during COVID because they're frontline workforce. So when everyone else was not able to travel and see them, like how did we get messages to those people if they don't have a laptop or a phone? We install screens, and that became the communication channel of choice because it was around them as they worked. Sometimes delivering information kind of critical to like, so if it's like a logistics company, it's like, okay, well, here's how many packages we've sent out in the last hour. Here's the backup. Like often call centers will use it as well. But how do the people say in head office who can't travel go and address them? So often like even a broadcasting a town hall, and we integrate with Zoom, for example. So you can do a Zoom and then push out to all these screens and have all these people stand around and see them. So it's really just trying to make, you know, our spaces, our workspaces, regardless of what they are, they're internet connected now. But you can't see that. Like the internet is invisible. So what is the visual layer of communication of all of these different products? Well, that's what ScreenCloud does, is it effectively puts a visual layer on what's already happening digitally around you. Mm-hmm. But unless you had a device in your hand or on your desk, how would you see it? How would you get to feed back into it? And that's what the screens are there for.
It's so hard for me. I'm someone who's backpacked for 4 months without a computer or phone. And yet it's still so hard for me to envision not having a computer or a phone to see a message. I'm picturing myself like in a hospital or something where you're running around and your life doesn't revolve around a computer like all of us in tech. And so you're not checking emails or text messages or anything. You're racing around to do your job and there may be an important message. And
So I'll give you a couple of examples. So like in a retail store, like I won't name, it's one of our biggest customers. I won't name them on here. We're not allowed to.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're a huge American driven retail company. And, you know, the email address is the store name. So the store manager gets the emails, and that every day they might get like an Excel spreadsheet with the results of the day before. And then they may or may not like print that out and stick it on a wall. So people actually know how they're performing and how they're performing as a team. But we can take all of that. I mean, sometimes if the store manager's not in, no one's going to see it. So right. They're completely flying blind. But with a screen in the back office, we can real time show them, even to like the latest 15 minutes or even quicker, it depends on the system. We can actually see how people are, how it's performing, how they're doing that, and get those messages consistently. I have a bit of nerdy facts about this because this is obviously my life, basically. 80% of the active workforce globally is considered deskless. 80%.
Wow.
Right?
I am so in my bubble.
No, and we all are. We all are. Because if you work in an office, and if you have historically worked in an office in like a metropolitan area, you just think that's what everyone does.
Yeah.
But if you think about the whole planet, it's 80%. It's something like, I think the active workforce is something like 2.7 billion people. It like, so, you know, take away children and retired people and anything and people who can't work. It's honestly, it's most of it. It's our educators. It's our, it's all those people delivering all this stuff to us. It's basically all the heroes of the last year and a half.
Right.
This is the people that we like to try and serve and connect. And often they feel really like forgotten by the business that they work in. And there's sort of a cultural divide between those up in HQ and those out on the front lines. And I think COVID made that cultural divide even wider,
right,
where we could all stay at home and stay safe, but they had to go out and still serve and still like get the job done so that we could eat, so that we could order things online and Amazon deliveries every day and all of the stuff that right. we did. And like our kind of mission, if you were to really boil it down, is to try and connect companies in a better way with employee engagement between teams, and to make everyone empathize and understand the role of the other.
Yeah.
So that those guys in the ivory tower aren't actually quite as, you know, who do you think they are? They're actually really doing a really good and important job too. So we try and tell the stories both ways.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, and just my belief is that if you can just make a tiny incremental change into how people feel about their work, if you put that out at scale, the whole world changes. Just a tiny, tiny thing. And that's what we're trying to educate clients on. And historically, our industry has been a bit more obsessed with the screen itself because we're born out of the audiovisual world, which is historically the only way you could do it was with quite bespoke hardware and things like that. But now you can do it with just regular TVs you can get in Best Buy or something. And I am trying to change the narrative on this to go, let's think less about how we work with screens and more about why we work with screens and what we should be doing and be a bit more intentional with the content. So you got me on my favorite subject, so I'm just ranting away. You want to go to edit all this out. Okay, thanks, mate. Cheers.
No, I'm curious what inspired you guys to build this. Like, what was the pain that was happening and that excited you to build the solution?
So it's strange enough, it's nothing to do with what I just said. I'm a real believer in this. Like our journey in this journey started for us with some R&D we were doing back in 2014. I've been working with my co-founders since 2004. So a long time we've been working together. We had a digital agency and we started to build our own products. And this was one of the products. And the reason for it was I was doing an MBA at the time, part-time. And the MBA subject was my own business. So it was an interesting thing. So I was trying to basically grow our SMB company. We were a small, you know, business back then. My tutor at UCL, he kept saying to me, I'm not a numbers guy. I've never been very good with numbers. I'm a bit kind of phobic of it. I'm getting better, but I'm working on it. But for me to understand numbers and to really feel comfortable with them, I need to see them constantly and start to kind of basically, I don't know, become friends with them. So that sounds weird.
Right.
But like not just look at it once, because as soon as I see a spreadsheet, my eyes just go, oh, numbers. But if I see them enough, I kind of start to get familiar. Yeah. I'd say there's a lot of people, and it's embarrassing. I'm CEO. I'm supposed to be like all over this. But for me, I was like, well, can't we get these up on screens in our office? So I just wanted to put three screens up. It wasn't a big office.
Right.
And I looked into it and I got quotes back for like $10,000. I was like, oh my God, I just want to show like spreadsheets on there and just have it update. Like, this isn't that technical. And it was around the same time that Chromecast and Amazon Fire TV was first coming out.
Yeah.
And so Luke, my partner, CTO, was like, I think I could make these devices work and we could just put a regular TV, like a, you know, $400 TV up on the wall with a Chromecast and we could make that work. So we did. And what it did is open up the market to all these smaller businesses who historically would have had quotes like that for like 10 grand or, because the margins in this game, if you're selling hardware, are thin. Right. So you want to sell 50 screens. You want to sell installation services and content.
Right.
Not to a small business with three screens. That's like, they don't want to spend that much money. They can't.
Right.
It's not worth it.
Yeah.
So we made it worth it. We said, look, you know what? You can use consumer hardware and we can internet connect it. And then we'll build apps to make you get Excel or Google Sheets or Google Drive or whatever, or PowerPoint up on a screen. And you can do this yourself. The idea was to be like MailChimp for screens and to sort of democratize it. And we did that. We were probably the first in the market to be doing that. Now we have a lot of copycats doing it, which is kind of why we're moving a bit more up market, because there's a bit of a price war going on, which we're not so interested in. But obviously for the first few years, it was just to see if we could. And you know, there was a lot of people from the incumbent industry were like, oh no, you can't use consumer hardware. Like that's not professional. Well, my TV survived enough Netflix binges to tell me that it can do it. So that's kind of where we come from, really.
And how large is your team? You talked about you're in three different countries. Is it three or four?
Well, it's three countries, four locations, because Northern Ireland's part of Great Britain. So it's Great Britain and Northern Ireland in the UK. But it's two locations.
And how many people are part of your team?
So the whole team is now 105 people.
Insane.
It's got
a lot of responsibility.
and growing by the day. We're very engineering and product focused. I really believe in a product driven growth, and that's, I'm biased because, you know, me and Luke is much more technical than me, but I was a developer back in the day too. And so we really believe that product first rather, and then kind of marketing and sales comes once you've got the fit. And there's a lot of moving parts to what we do. So we have like actually got 2/3 of our company are engineers, which is really high. And our engineering is done in Thailand and in Northern Ireland. Then our go-to-market team are in LA.
Yeah.
And also in London, we also do like rest of world go-to-market, finance, and like, you know, all of the other bits and bobs you have to do. Most of the people team are there and things like that.
And why LA? What attracted you to be in LA versus like, say, San Francisco or even New York? And I imagine no to New York because London kind of covers that. But I mean, is that why or?
It's a really good question. Can I tell a little story first before I tell you my answer?
Yes.
So
this was actually a podcast after all.
Yeah, well, true. I hope it's good for people. So this was like after the event. So like in fairness, we'd already made our decision, but I knew why we made a good decision. I went to a dinner that was organized by a venture capitalist that I know in London. And he said, I want to put all smart founders in a room together at different stages.
Right.
And like wildly different stages. So I was kind of more at the early one. And there was like people there from like ServiceNow and stuff. So like floated multi-billion. So that was cool. And we were all Brits, but mainly we're Brits who our main market is America. And ScreenCloud's 70% revenue is America. And it got round to the more experienced people in the room. And we talked about the States and like, how do you tackle the States when you're coming, you know, because we originally didn't start there.
Right.
Everyone laughed and went, everyone defaults New York, right? Everyone in Britain defaults New York. The reason is it's fast flight.
Yeah.
We all probably already have friends there. Like literally my godkids live there and my best friends live there. And it's a city that's culturally very close to Europe in terms of how it operates. And so we all default New York.
Yeah.
But he said, look, to be honest, you shouldn't do that. Firstly, if you're going to do New York, you've got to go in big, like, and really kind of get a decent sized team or no one in New York takes you seriously. Secondly, and you can tell me if this is wrong.
Yeah.
He said, if you're selling into the rest of America from New York, that's not actually that well received. And we have customers in every state, right? We're well spread across the whole of America. So Americans would prefer to be sold to by Brits than by New Yorkers, allegedly.
That is
true. I don't
know
how true this is.
No, I think that is true. I think a lot of Americans have something about the English accent.
Yeah, and for some reason that
and the politeness, the cordialness,
on the whole, we're fairly polite, but you know, you never know. And so anyone says like, stop defaulting New York, and also you can, as you said, you can cover the time zone pretty well. And really, you should be thinking West Coast, because then you get that full coverage between the two sides. And if you're thinking West Coast, well, San Francisco is the obvious choice, but it's extremely competitive, very expensive. And wasn't so much the money that put me off, but what really put me off was I looked at the average tenure of like people working in startups there, and you have people like there for just 1 year and then they vest some shares and move. And that's not our culture. Like, we've got people who've worked inside of ScreenCloud, but they've worked for us before since 2004 and other people since 2009 and 10. Like, we have long-term deep relationships with our team. And generally speaking, people stay quite a long time. And one of the reasons things work here is because there's a bit more family vibe to it. People are really bought in. They're not just here for a quick smash and grab, like, oh, I've got some shares and some money, I'm off. And I don't blame people. If that's the game, that's the game. But it's not really a game that we play. And in Thailand, it's definitely not that culture. Right. In Britain, it's maybe 50-50 on that. And I wanted to go to a city where I felt that culturally we were closer aligned. I got to know some people from New York who actually worked for a competitor of ours based in LA.
Yeah.
That was, so there was a bit of serendipity to it. And so we were speaking, and then he said, look, I want to come, you know, I'll come and work for you. We kind of offered that as well as a sort of mutual thing. And he said, look, we can build a great team here, especially go to market. There's excellent salespeople, excellent marketers. This is, I mean, think of LA. It's like,
yeah, we're all bubbly.
They're bubbly. They're charming. They can chat. They're universally pretty well liked, I think. And it's actually very convenient. Like, you can get anywhere from LA. You can fly anywhere in the States and overseas. So for a global company like us, it just seemed like a really good choice. And I learned a bit more about, like, the infrastructure of LA is improving drastically with the Olympics coming, and I think the Super Bowl. And it's going to get a bit more commuter friendly. That's the one thing about LA that was a bit wow, traffic.
It's definitely not commuter friendly.
It's a bit, a bit full on. But I think that's starting to improve a bit, like, and over time that'll improve there. So there was I spoke to someone who also told me, is like, you know, if you think back over the last century, LA was the jewel in the crown of California. And then, you know, little city just a bit further north went, all right, and they sort of stole the prize a bit. And now it's time for, like, LA to kind of come back and show its teeth and be like, no, LA is the major city of California.
Yeah, I've been telling a lot of people, I think LA post-pandemic is going to be stronger than it was pre-pandemic, at least as a tech community. I'm really excited about. So from what I know, you're kind of like, you travel back and forth. Your co-founder is actually relocating to LA full time. And then you have a team in LA, which is so exciting. So, I mean, it's really exciting how much you're planting your seeds in LA. What do you all do to immerse yourself in the LA tech community? Meaning, when you're just coming here, it's, for me, it's the most curious question I have, because I think LA isn't a tourist city. It's marketed as a tourist city, but it's not actually a tourist city because it's so big.
Yeah.
And it's so everywhere. Like, if you don't know where to go and what to do, I feel like it would be really easy to get lost here.
You need insider knowledge. You definitely need insider knowledge. I think London's the same. It's nowhere near, isn't as sprawling as LA, but, like, it is, it has a wide mass. And, you know, like, the local versus tourist knowledge, like, that's why people, there's certain parts that people just don't live in because they're like, oh yeah, that's where the tourists go. But, like, this is where the real world happens. Like, know, and it does kind of blend a little bit, but, like, it doesn't as well. And I think any big city is probably a bit like that. I think we need to do a better job of immersing ourselves. I think we were just kind of, because the team was quite small, and then we were just about to ramp up, and then pandemic hit, and that kind of put everything on pause. Because, you know, it was a tough year for us because, I mean, screens go in places that then got shut.
Yeah, 100%. So,
we feel like we've kind of been through a, you know, like many businesses, like, we weren't completely destroyed by it, but we were hurt by it.
Right.
But thankfully we had segments of our, you know, verticals, which I said, like, they couldn't close and didn't. And so it wasn't as bad as it could have been, but it was pretty rough. But we had to kind of, like, put a bit of pause on our growth plans.
Right.
Now this year things are kind of coming back and sort of roaring back actually now, which is nice. It's like, we're back in the game again. Yay. So LA is going to be a team that grows significantly. It's probably going to be the fastest growing team now that we've got, because engineering is pretty mature. It'll right. keep growing, but the go-to-market side is now, we're getting into our growth stage. We're past 10 million ARR. We're kind of grow. We've got pretty aggressive growth plans. So LA is going to be heart and soul of that. I think it's been really hard to immerse ourselves when we've not been able to travel. Like yeah. I was usually on a plane all the time. Then yeah. I just wasn't. It's been the weirdest right, right. time. I've found Twitter's quite helpful. In fact, actually, that's yeah. how I kind of connected with you guys, wasn't yep. it? It was through Twitter.
Yeah.
And I am seeing the kind of the community there is starting to sort of come together a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm seeing a lot of founder meetups, sort of informal ones, people putting on a dinner and things like that, which really reminds me of kind of how the London tech scene and the San Francisco tech scene got going, was this sort of natural coming together of like-minded people, sharing ideas and thoughts and just supporting each other, you know, right. investing in each other and supporting each other, which is what any healthy ecosystem needs to do. And it's best done in that kind of behind closed doors, like dinners and things like that, because that's when people can be honest about the struggles, because it's not easy doing this. And then right. sometimes, I'm being fairly honest with you. I just told you about our struggles last
yeah.
year. Like,
yeah.
But I think a lot of people do put a very big front of like, everything's awesome all the
I
time.
Know. And it I'm drives like, me crazy.
It's not.
yeah.
No.
It drives me
I've been
crazy.
Running my own thing since 2004. Like, I've just been too weathered. I've yeah. been through financial crisis, dot-com crash, or came out of dot-com crash. And life goes up and down. And anyone who's built a business has had struggles. It's just, I just defy anyone to not have had that. And I think that the people that I get the most inspiration from and the most knowledge from is others who've been there before me. And they tend to be quite humble because they also respect the journey too. And, you know, so I think that the more that can happen and happen in real life where people can build trust, I think the better. So hopeful, like these things will continue. Hopefully this recovery carries on.
So some of the hashtags, I think Twitter is a great way to plug into the community, and some of the hashtags to follow. So everybody knows hashtag TechLA, hashtag LongLA, hashtag SiliconBeachLA. Is there any particular way you would recommend searching? Like, how do you utilize Twitter to plug into LA Tech?
So again, I kind of go down the rabbit hole I always very interested when I see on Twitter any founder that's been either talked about, retweeted, or often in the thread, I always look at their bio. I'm just permanently curious about who they are, and I love just following them. And then once you kind of start following a few LA people, then when they start talking to each other, you start seeing more and you kind of build that picture up. So it was literally just through being curious and following threads and just always looking at bios and things like that. And then any founder that's in LA, I always connect with them on LinkedIn and Twitter and reach out and just introduce myself. Yeah, I just find people are really responsive that way and kind of, they think it's cool. I think we're all on a bit of a mission, you know?
I agree. A couple of questions about immersing yourself in LA for everybody just moving to LA. One is, that's why We Are LA Tech exists is, you know, I mean, We Are LA Tech is me with this unusually like large heart and motivation to love a lot of people. I blame it on being a Pisces. so it's just like, I'm not a tourism board or anything, but like if you're moving to LA and you're trying to get plugged into tech, just shoot me a message on Twitter. And then I just go out of my way for some unusual reason, literally unusual. Whoa. I don't ask you to pay me. I don't ask you. I don't understand why I do that.
I replied to a thread and you know, suddenly we were talking and you invited me on this and, you know, you're giving us this exposure to the scene and to the community, which is so valuable. I'm a big believer of the pay it forward kind of school of thought. One, because it just makes you a better person. And two, without it, like you don't want to like tit for tat on it, but if you make the first move and you make that positive move and you have that positive energy and genuine like altruistic desire just to make things better, people gravitate towards that. That's the kind of people that people want to help. That's the sort of person that comes first to your mind when you're thinking about, you know, who to connect with, who to work with. And I find that it always pays back. You've got to play a long game. And I think that's obviously what you're doing, which is fabulous. And, you know, like this is how ecosystems thrive. It needs a little push at the beginning. Yeah. You know, it's like the bread, like the little maker. Yeah. I thought, what's that thing, the sourdough you have? Like, you have your little thing, you keep it in the fridge and stuff, and you out of that you grow your breads.
And eat, like grow. Yes, I know. What you're talking about. I haven't done it before, but I know what you're. I know what you're talking
and
about.
You got to keep it alive. It's like a Tamagotchi thing. You got to keep it alive. Like otherwise, it's like that's quite really a lot of responsibility.
Cool.
Bread.
It's actually a really cool analogy.
I just can't remember what it's called. Why is it called?
I think it's cool. I think it's cool though that I'm not an office space. I'm not a law firm. I'm not. I don't have some back end thing that I'm trying to do. Mm. I'm just an unusually loving person. like you know, and I think it's cool. It's also something, I mean, TMI, but I need to work on my own boundaries and figure out to make sure I'm okay in the process of all this giving. But literally, like, a company was like, I'm trying to do a shoot. I don't know where to do a shoot. I spent 3 hours like reaching out to my contacts to find them all the different options to do a shoot. It's like, I don't know.
I'm going to be all over your DMs. I'm like, right, we need this. I'm looking for, I'm looking for account executives. I need some SDRs.
And I got so excited doing it. I felt like I won a game finding them these like amazing places. I was like, oh, wow. Like, look at that. You know, I don't know. I'm a very, very unusual person.
It will evolve, but it will evolve. And I think the obvious fit will just naturally surface. And like my mom always told me, like, don't chase the money, just do the right work and the money comes. And I really believe that that's true. And, you know, I've always played the longer game and still playing the long game. but then, you know, there is that thing you've probably heard, the infinite game. Have you heard that sort of phrase?
No.
It's the infinite game. It's a Simon Sinek thing, which is like, you know, if you're playing short games, you're always looking for, well, if I do this, I'll get that by then. But if you're playing an infinite game, like the whole point of a short game is that it ends. You know, you go and play a computer game. You want to beat the other person or something. But if your game is like, well, this is just my life, then it's infinite. It's the rest of your life. And therefore your whole attitude isn't to like win the next move. It's to stay in the game. Right.
Right.
And if by staying in the game, you're basically bringing positive energy and help and service to it, then the game will ultimately reward you back for that in the long term, or you've got to believe that that will happen.
Right.
If you're playing short games, like effectively games which are finite, it's about, well, I need this to end quickly and gain something so I can then go and play another game.
Right.
I think your natural gravity, your sort of sphere of personality is clearly naturally towards the infinite game, which is like me.
Man,
I should read up
on the infinite game. I hadn't.
Yeah,
I love Simon Sinek.
It's a speech. Yeah. It's a speech he gave. It's good. It's really good.
I'll be going after this interview.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something in it. And, you know, I don't want to ever retire. Like, you know, I mean, ScreenCloud may well be sold one day. There'll need to be a liquidity event at some point for investors, but that can be done in different ways. That doesn't mean we have to, because a lot of people will say, like, well, when are you going to exit? When are you going to exit? I'm like, I'm trying to solve a problem, a really big problem, and help companies solve their big problems, which I don't think will ever go away. The problem of communicating is constant. Like, and even when we get loads of tools to help us, we get worse at it. Like, social media is making communication go downhill, not uphill, in some respects. And people are feeling overwhelmed. That's what we see a lot.
Right.
Overwhelmed with email, overwhelmed with Slack. So getting through to people through the noise has become tougher. That problem's never going to go away. And I'm even only planning to make incremental differences. So this thing will go on forever, because if you're in love with the problem or in love with the idea, then why would you ever want it to end?
Oh, that's beautiful. I love that. One more question. It's more a selfish question because I love software. What is your go-to like mobile app or website? Like, what do you love?
Ah, right. Well, my favorite at the moment is this one I'm wearing on my wrist, which is called the Whoop Band. Do you know the Whoop Band?
Oh, I have. Go ahead, tell everybody about the Whoop. Yes.
So the Whoop is basically, if you're a bit into, I know I said I wasn't very into numbers, but I am into data and learning about things. And so I've learned so much about kind of myself and my mood and how it reflects on how I've slept and how my heart rate is and all of these types of things. So the Whoop is like constantly feeding information into the app in my phone, and I'm getting almost like real-time feedback. And it's really interesting when I don't get good recovery, which can be both like just bad sleep or just kind of stress and all that sort of thing, and how I feel subsequently, I really feel the difference. And when I'm well recovered, I just feel great. Like I had a really good night's sleep last night, which is why I'm quite bubbly today and kind of like bouncing around. So I really enjoy that. I think also because it's got the IoT side of things of a connectable device and the internet, which is kind of my thing as well. So that's my favorite at the moment.
Whoop. I have the Oura Ring. So I was researching Oura Ring versus Whoop. Which one do I want to do? Yeah.
You know what? The only reason I didn't go that route was because I don't wear ring. I haven't got any rings on my fingers, wasn't sure if I would find.
And
that
I didn't really want to wear a watch all the time.
There we go. That's it. I mean, I bet there's so product managers on both sides scratching their head, going, "What's the big thing?" It's like, is that? It's just that.
That's so
there
funny.
There you go, guys. There's your insight.
What LA Tech person or company have you come across that you just has really impressed you?
Right. I'm going to give a shout out to a company I actually just angel invested in called Buzzcast. So Buzzcast, they're brand new. They came out of the event space. So like high-end events.
Right.
And they ran an agency which would basically produce really high-end events.
Right.
And then during the lockdown, they basically did a enterprise version of Hopin. So everyone knows Hopin, right? Yes. You kind of went, woo, there we go. There's how you do events
online.
But
just in case people don't know Hopin, it's just an event software for virtual conferences.
Yeah, and it's probably for smaller ones. So Buzzcast is for ones where you've maybe got like 100,000 people coming, multiple tracks and really high-end production, even if it's a full-on online. Yeah. And they're very much set up to be online and in person. So they're longer term. They think that every in-person event will have an online version. I agree with that. It really just expands out to the people who couldn't travel, whatever it might be. And they're pros. They're total pros. They know this space inside out. So through AngelList, I do angel investments, small ones. I'm a little check guy. Helpful little check guy.
Little check goes a long way. So
it does. Yes. It does. And you know what? I put in through the syndicate that was raising with Buzzcast. I was super impressed with them, and I reached out to them. And so I'm going to give them a big, you know, virtual high five. There we go.
I
think that look out for them. I think they had an incredible year, inevitably, but I think they have an incredible future ahead of them, and they are very long LA.
So what would your recommendation be to someone just landing in the LA, wanting to get immersed in the culture and in the tech space, and they don't even know where to live or what to do or anything? They have no connections. What would you say?
Well, I suppose it would be a tricky one, but I would say make connections. But making connections isn't as hard as everyone thinks, because I find the culture is very open and friendly. And it's also a vast, vast city. And like, I just even put out messages on Facebook, going back like 4 years, where I was like, didn't really know that many people. And sure enough, friends of friends were like, oh, my really good friends are in LA. And I was like, okay. And I was like, oh, that's, yeah, probably a bit of an imposition to ask them. You know what? The first time I was over there, they had me around for dinner. They took me out. We had a lovely dinner kind of by the beach. They were racking their brains, like, who can we get to help? Who can we introduce you to? And straight away, they came up with some people. And they were literally on their phone texting them straight away. They're like, oh, you know, Mark's in town. He really could do with like a chat. And they were like, yeah, I can make some time tomorrow. And I was like, oh my God, like, these people don't owe me anything at all. It's a friend of a friend. And I think that you need someone to help you navigate. And I think, you know, I think it's impossible, well, not impossible, but really, really tough if you're just completely alien to the culture to just, you're really in the lap of the gods there of how that's going to go for you. But I think everyone understands that. And is that a little bit like how I think about founders going through their early stages? Right. I like to try and help them because I've been through it. And I think we always kind of almost look back and want to like lend out a helping hand to those that are just coming in, and just knowing that we're all better together if we just help each other out. So I just find that with just even a little bit of digging, you can probably get an introduction, and an introduction gets you another one. And then you just start to get a sense of it and you build this picture. And I've always found this with any subject that I'm new to. So whether it's a location or a new technical problem or a new, whatever it might be, a new customer vertical, when I start to hear the same things coming from different people, the same thoughts, I feel like I've kind of reached a sort of invisible perimeter of the subject. And I've got, okay, so here's the core things. And I keep hearing this repeated and this. And so I start to kind of move towards those either those areas or those people or whatever it might be. And you just start to refine your knowledge down. I don't know if that's a bit out there as a kind of idea, but basically find a friend, but the people are up for helping.
And how can people connect with you?
So I am pretty active on social. For my sins, I actually quite like LinkedIn. I know that it often gets derided, like LinkedIn.
No,
I actually quite
great.
Like it. I find there's a lot of positive energy on LinkedIn. So I'm Mark McDermott and ScreenCloud on LinkedIn. On Twitter, I'm Mr_McD, or just email me, mark@screencloud.com. And, you know, especially like anyone in the LA tech scene, we want to become like a positive part of this community here. We are growing here. We're small, have been historically small here. We want to get much bigger here. We're long LA, very long LA. We're not going to San Francisco next year. Trust me, it's not happening. And we want to create positivity in the community and contribute to it. And also, you know, just be a part of this amazing city. So reach out and we'd love to connect and talk.
And we'll include everything in the show notes. And so that's @MR_MCD on Twitter and MARK, last name MCDERMOTT on LinkedIn. Mark, thank you so much for hanging out with the We Are LA Tech podcast. What's one thing that we could all do to support and accelerate you here in our community?
Ah, well, if you see any blank screens on a wall, you know that there's a better way we could be using that screen. So let's have no more blank screens or cable news, and let's have ScreenCloud on that screen. That would be amazing. So if you've got a blank screen and you want to show better content, then ScreenCloud's there, and hit me up. I'll do you a good deal because my LA friends could all get a good deal.
Love it.
Am I going to get millions of emails now going, I want a free screen? No. My investors hopefully not listening to that one.
Thank you so much for hanging out with the We Are LA Tech podcast. To connect and collaborate with more amazing people in the LA Tech community, remember, go to the wearelatech.com/community. That's wearelatech.com/community. Say hello on social @WeAreLATech, on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. I will see you guys, talk to you guys, hear you guys in the next episode. Bye.
Goodbye. Hi, I'm Mark McDermott, and I'm the CEO of ScreenCloud. We're a SaaS platform for digital signage, and we're based in Santa Monica. You're listening to We Are LA Tech.
The We Are LA Tech podcast is hosted and produced by me, Esprit Devora.
With help from Janice Geronimo.
Edited by Corey Jennings.
Production and voiceover by Adam Carroll.
Music from Jay Huffman Live and Epidemic Sound. The We Are LA Tech podcast is a wearetech.fm production.